Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, NewYorkTimes.com, ClassicRock.about.com, RollingStone.com, VGORecords.com, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number is brought to us by Elton John. Title, Benny and the Jets. We'll be hearing more about and from Elton John later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions today come to us once again from RollingStone.com. First question, which of the following acts has not released a cover of the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction? A. Otis Redding, B. Devo, C. Pearl Jam, or D. Cat Power? Second question, what was the Rolling Stones' first single? Was it A. Get Off of My Cloud, B. Not Fade Away, C. Satisfaction, or D. Time Is on My Side? The answers to these two multiple-choice trivia questions will be given at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program, Today in Rock History, brought to us by BGORecords.com. And today is April 10th and April 11th. What were the number one hits on these days? Well, back in 1963, it was Jerry and the Pacemakers with How Do You Do It? And back in 1965, it was Freddie and the Dreamers, I'm Telling You Now. Back in 1970, the Beatles with Let It Be. And the number one hit back on this weekend in 1976 with Frampton with Comes Alive. And back in 1981, it was Hall & Oates, Kiss on My List. Back in 1982 was Iron Maiden, The Number of the Beast. And finally, back in 1992, it was Def Leppard, Adrenalize. Now, if you were born on April the 10th, you share a birthday with Sheb Woolley. He was born on that day back in 1921, and you may remember his song, The Purple People Eater. Back in 1932, Nathaniel Nelson from the Flamingos was born on April the 10th. You also share a birthday with Glenn Campbell. He was born on that day back in 1936, Rhinestone Cowboy. Bobby Hatfield from the Righteous Brothers was also born on that day, 1940, April the 10th. Ricky Valance, Tell Laura I Love Her, born in 1940 on April the 10th. And finally, back in 1957, Steve Gustafson was born on April the 10th, 10,000 Maniacs. Deaths on April the 10th include Stu Sutcliffe, the original Beatle, died on April 10th, 1962. Now, if you were born on April the 11th, you share a birthday with Nigel Pulsford from Bush. He was born on that day back in 1963. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1956, it was Nat King Cole badly beaten up on the stage before a white audience in Birmingham, Alabama. That same year, 1956, on that same day, James Brown debuted on the R&B chart with Please, Please, Please. 2 years later, 1958, on that date, Jerry Lee Lewis hits the UK chart with Breathless. Back in 1961, on this weekend, it was Bob Dylan playing his first professional gig at Gertie's Folk City. He's on the same bill as John Lee Hooker. He sings House of the Rising Sun and Song to Woody, supported by Joan Baez, who is in the audience. And back in 1963 this weekend, it was the Chiffons, He's So Fine, hitting the UK chart. Back in 1964, this weekend, it was the Beatles occupy a record-breaking 14 positions on the U.S. Hot 100 chart. Back in 1965, NME poll winners concert at Wembley with the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Moody Blues, and the Kinks. Back in 1967, this weekend, it was flying back to London from the U.S. Paul McCartney writes the Magical Mystery Tour and sketches ideas for the film. Back in 1970, the Doors singer Jim Morrison is dragged off stage by keyboardist Ray Manzarek during a concert in Boston as Morrison screams to the audience, "Would you like to see my genitals?" Well, back in 1970, that same year on this weekend, Paul McCartney announced he's quitting the Beatles, is forming McCartney Productions, and that he's bought the film rights to Rupert the Bear. And finally, back in 1981, this weekend, it was Eddie Van Halen marrying Valerie. This next article, entitled L.A. Band Tries to Cash In with Free Monthly Album, was published in the News and Observer on the 22nd of March, 2010. Los Angeles. In an instrument-filled garage almost every day for the past year, musician John Wood has tried to find a new way to make a living. Wood and a bunch of other artists use the soundproof space with an extra high ceiling to create a new album every month. It's a staggering feat when you consider it means recording a new song every 3 days, and then they essentially give it away for free. Wood is at the vanguard of how musicians are negotiating pay in a world overrun with free music online. He distributes his music to anyone who wants to download it, copy it, or share it with other people. He then asks for donations or subscriptions to CDs that he sends in the mail. Many artists have tinkered with mostly or completely free online album releases, such as Radiohead and Trent Reznor's Nine Inch Nails. They've instead aimed to make money on sales of souped-up deluxe CD sets or concert tickets. But musicians like Wood, who don't have a huge fan base, are unlikely to make it by filling arenas and selling high-priced goods. And as regular CD sales continue to fall, and major recording labels pare their artists' rosters, up-and-coming musicians have to find ways to promote themselves in ways that were unheard of a few years back. Wood's album A Month Plan, along with a written blog explaining his inspirations, is designed to spur interest and build loyalty among fans. He hopes that one day some real money can be made from it as well. Obviously, that would be a great side of it, and that's something we're aiming towards, Wood says, sitting by a mixing board surrounded by guitars and keyboards on a Friday afternoon. To me, this whole project is really just about music and art and creativity. Wood, 28, was trained as a jazz pianist and works with a rotating cadre of musicians to produce songs in wildly different genres. He has churned out Bach-inspired keyboards-only studies and snappy R&B tunes that would have no problem on commercial radio. One album in December was based entirely on the only three-way tie in the history of the quiz show Jeopardy, which was made possible by the sportsmanship showed by the returning champion. These monthly releases can be heard on a blog Wood writes called Learning Music Monthly, which feels more like a magazine than a CD. Wood calls himself the editor-in-chief, and the site shows original art and sometimes sheet music. Listeners can also sometimes hear isolated recordings of each instrument or vocal in a particular song. So far, Wood has gotten about 100 fans to donate anywhere from a penny to tens of dollars to the project. Some have paid $59 a year for a monthly CD in the mail. As a one-time bonus, he wrote a personal song to each subscriber on his or her birthday card and sent that in the mail, too. That made it worth the subscription right there, says Jeremy Zitter, a friend and subscriber. The article then skips down. In the past, big record labels paid musicians large advances and then shouldered cost of recording and promoting albums. As song sales rolled in, the labels would recoup their investment. With song sales slowing, largely due to piracy, the system of big advances is crumbling. And because free songs are so widely available, Vostros president, John Gillian, said musicians' main battle now is just to get noticed. If someone downloads one of these albums for free and puts it on their iPod and enjoys it, that's victory, says Gilligan. 24. There's so much content out there that for someone to care enough to seek it out and listen to it, long term, that person's going to be a fan. They're going to come back, and they're going to want more. That's really the strategy behind it. The article then skips down. Wood's marathon songwriting efforts are paying off in another way. After 24 albums in 2 years, his collection has hundreds of songs. Some have attracted the attention of television producers interested in using his music in their shows. This next article is published by Kate Brumback, Associated Press writer, on the 11th of March, 2010. Entitled, Georgia Man Who Posted Elton John Must Die, Arrested. Atlanta. A Georgia man who posted a video of himself on the internet holding a sign that said, Elton John must die, has been arrested for making terroristic threats. Neil Horsley, 65, was arrested early Wednesday in Carlton, about 50 miles west of Atlanta, said Atlanta Police Sergeant Curtis Davenport. He would not say who Horsley is accused of threatening, but Horsley's son Nathan said he thought the arrest was connected to the video about the musician. In the video posted February 28 on YouTube, Horsley held the sign in front of a building where he said John has a condo. John's publicist, Fran Curtis, confirmed that John has an Atlanta apartment, but declined further comment. Horsley was upset that John, who is gay, told Parade magazine in an interview last month that he thought Jesus was a compassionate, super-intelligent gay man who understood human problems. What Elton John has done is desecrated the image of the Lord Jesus Christ, blasphemed the Lord Jesus Christ, Horsley said in the interview. Horsley founded the Creator's Rights Party and has declared himself a candidate in the 2010 governor's race. He kicked off his campaign July 4, 2008 in downtown Carlton, wearing a placard showing the head of an aborted fetus while singing an anti-abortion song. The State Ethics Commission, which oversees election filings, has no record of Horsley's campaign. He previously gained notoriety in the late 1990s for his role in establishing a website that published the names and addresses of doctors who performed abortions. Planned Parenthood officials called the site a hit list for terrorists. Fulton County jail records showed Horsley also faces charges of criminal defamation and disseminating terroristic threats over the Internet. He was being held Thursday in the Fulton County jail on $40,000 bond. As conditions for his release, a judge said he must live with his son in a house with a phone landline and must pay 10% of his bond in cash. Horsley's son said his father does not have an attorney. This next article is written by David Menconi, published on February 26, 2010. Still wonderful, wonderful. It should come as no surprise that Johnny Mathis is every bit as smooth over the phone as he is on record, whether speaking or singing. The man has the same velvety voice and effortless cool. It takes about 3 words for you to realize that it's the same voice that launched Chances Are, It's Not For Me to Say, and other Quiet Storm masterpieces up the charts. At 74 years old, Mathis is into the victory lap phase of his career. He has nothing to prove at this point, and yet he still gets out to sing for the folks, including at a two-night stand this past weekend with the NC Symphony. He was kind enough to call us from Los Angeles for a pre-show chat. Question, how did you take care of your voice? Well, mostly it's just my natural instincts not to talk too much or overextend my voice by yelling and screaming. I started studying at a very early age, and all the teachers I had were adamant about how I was going to want to sing all my life, and the only thing that would prevent that is if I couldn't. They instilled in me that the first thing every morning is to take care of my voice, because that's the thing I want to do the rest of my life. Before you know it, you're 74 and still singing. It's a wonderful feeling to still be able to sing. How old were you when you started singing? Well, my dad started me off at 5 or 6, singing for him and his friends. When I was about age 12, he asked if I wanted to take some vocal lessons, so I started studying. Later in life, I studied with different people for different reasons. Learning how to record was a project very different from singing on stage. Most of the musicians I've worked with over the years have helped me along the way. If you weren't a singer, what might you be doing now? I was a pretty good athlete, had the opportunity to go to the Olympic trials as a high jumper. But the same week I had to make a decision about whether to do that or go to New York to make my first record. So it was a bittersweet moment for me. I'd have probably gotten involved in some manner of teaching. I had wonderful teachers, and I was always interested in that. I did well in school, considering how many other activities outside studying I did, track and field, and I played basketball with Bill Russell and Casey Jones, though not on their level, of course, and studying music, singing, extracurricular choirs. I've read that you're quite shy, which doesn't come through on your records. How'd you overcome that? It wasn't easy. Along the way, I met a few other people who told me it's not a bad thing. Henry Fonda comes to mind, a very shy man, who succeeded in his acting career. He gave me a few pointers about it not being a negative thing. I eventually had to get over 65% to 75% of my shyness just to go on stage and sing some of the songs I did. The positive thing about it is I can be very focused because I don't dissipate my attention span. I keep within myself quite a bit and focus on what I'm doing, but it took a long time. I'd stand on stage with clenched fists and eyes closed and sing. I overcame a lot. It also had to do with not knowing what I was doing, learning on the job. What was it like singing with Ray Charles on his final album, 2004's Genius Loves Company? I had a conductor, Victor Vanacore, who went on to work with Ray for 15 to 20 years. He introduced me on several occasions, and it was fascinating to meet him. Talk about someone who absolutely, totally spent every minute of every day involved with music. That was Ray Charles. But Victor was the catalyst for getting us together. He'd written an arrangement for Over the Rainbow, and Ray asked, "You think John would like to sing that with me?" "I don't know," Victor said. "John's pretty busy." When I heard about that, I screamed at him, "Are you kidding? That would be the greatest thing ever." So, of course, I did it, and it was a great honor. We sang in the studio next to each other, and I had a little problem with one word, how to get it to fit, but he just laid it on me. "This is how you do it." That was close to when he passed away. You're an interpretive singer, but you have ever tried writing songs yourself? I tried on several occasions, but I have no talents or abilities whatsoever. I have great reverence and love for great songwriters, and I'm not great, not even good. Over the years, I've met some of the greatest, like Cole Porter, but I never got the hang of it. Article then ends with this question, "Do you ever watch American Idol?" Answer, "Once in a while, I just hate watching artistically gifted people having to compete because growing up, I was frightened to death I'd have to do that. So I feel bad for some of these kids who have so much thrown on them so fast. But at least if someplace you can go. Kids growing up today, I don't see many avenues for you to learn starting out." So what do we know about this artist that opened today's program? And we'll close it as well, Elton John. Well, this is downloaded from classicrock.about.com, article written by Dave White from the About.com guide, downloaded on the 13th of March, 2010. His full name, originally Reginald Kenneth Dwight, now Sir Elton Hercules John. He was born on March 25th, 1947, so it's just about his birthday now. His birthplace was Pinner, England. His great quote was, "The great thing about rock and roll is that someone like me can be a star." Significant Elton John facts. His 50 albums produced 86 hit singles between 1969 and 2005. During the 70s alone, he had 7 consecutive number one albums and 15 hit singles. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 1994, and with longtime collaborator Bernie Taupin, into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1992. By the time he was 4 years old, he was playing piano, exhibiting the ability to play any song he heard. He entered the Royal Academy of Music at age 11. His first band, the Corvettes, was formed in 1960, becoming Bluesology a few years ago, later, and touring the U.S. backing R&B acts. He met lyricist Bernie Taupin in 1966, and began a musical collaboration that continues today. He quickly established a reputation for his flamboyant showmanship and lifestyle. He then diversified. In addition to his rock discography, he has written several movie soundtracks, the most famous of which was for 1994's The Lion King, which was also adapted for Broadway. Another Broadway show based on novelist Anne Rice's character, the vampire Lestat, co-written with Taupin, is scheduled to open in March of 2006. Essential Elton John CD is Elton John's Greatest Hits. All of John's musical styles are represented, from the Tender Year Song to the rocking Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting to the quirky Benny and the Jets, which opened today's program, by the way. It also contains 1973's Candle in the Wind, which became the world's best-selling single of all time when it was re-recorded and dedicated to Princess Diana after her death. So let's take a listen to some of the snippets then from Elton John. We'll start off with Crocodile Rock, then we'll listen to Honky Cat, and then Saturday Night is All Right for Fighting.
I remember when Rock was young, me and Susie had so much fun, holding hands and skimming stones, had an old gold Chevy and a place of my own, but the biggest kick I ever got was doing a thing called the Crocodile Rock, while the other kids were rocking round the clock, we were hopping and bopping to the Crocodile Rock. Well, Crocodile Rock, a song to shout, and when your feet just can't keep still, I never knew me a better time, and I guess I never will.
Crocodile Rock, and now for some Honky Cat. From Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. And we'll conclude today's program with Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. But first, these articles. Now, this article is from Ben Cesario, published on February the 9th, 2010, NewYorkTimes.com. Kings of Leon, Jay-Z, and Stevie Wonder on the bill for Bonnaroo. Coming to the Bonnaroo this summer, Stevie Wonder, Dave Matthews Band, Kings of Leon, Jay-Z, Weezer, John Fogerty, Norah Jones, LCD Sound System, Jeff Beck, and the Flaming Lips playing Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. They, along with Regina Spektor, the Dead Weather, Phoenix, the Zac Brown Band, the National, Steve Martin, Kris Kristofferson, The Melvins and about 100 others are booked for the 9th Annual Bonnaroo Music and Arts Festival, scheduled for June the 10th to the 13th at its regular home, a 700-acre farm in Manchester, Tennessee. Most peculiar pairing so far, Daryl Hall with the hipster party rockers, Chromeo. Their common denominator, 1980s pop. Most prominent success story, Kings of Leon, who, according to the festival's announcement, are the first band to work its way up from a tent stage to a headlining slot. Full schedule and ticket information are available at Bonnaroo.com. From the 22nd of January 2010 issue of Entertainment Weekly, we see this review by W.P. of Spoon's Transference. Spoon and WP gives it an A- and says, download this. Who makes your money? You can't help but grin at this self-produced seventh offering from the indie stalwarts, who came awfully close to hitting the mainstream with their 2007 album, Ga 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 Ga, and have now retreated to a perfect distillation of the Spoon sound, steady staccato rhythms, occasional guitar bursts, and the wry vocals of frontman Britt Daniel. It may pretty much lack any semblance of conventional verse, chorus, verse structure, but for those who find the metronomic abstractions of this band soothing, Transference is exactly what you crave unadorned. Download this, Who Makes Your Money? And from the 5th of February 2010 issue of Entertainment Weekly, we see this review of the magnetic field's realism. After a detour into an the aptly named distortion in 2008, Stephen Merritt returns to chamber pot. The twinkling arrangements sound like something out of a child's music box, even as they mask sobering despair and twisted observations about the absurdity of it all. The delicate melody sung by Merritt and various innocents, including longtime collaborator Claudia Gonson, make all the psychic mayhem go down smoothly, barely leaving a trace of blood on the floor. Greg Cott gives it an A- and said, downloads these, Walk a Lonely Road, and You Must Be Out of Your Mind. So how'd you do on the two trivia questions? Question number one was, which one of the following acts has not released a cover of the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction? Was it Otis Redding? No, he did. Devo? No, he did also. Pearl Jam? Yes, that's the right answer. Pearl Jam did not release a cover of the Rolling Stones song, Satisfaction. Answer D was Cat Power, and Cat Power also released a cover. Question number two, what was the Rolling Stones' very first single? Was it Get Off of My Cloud? No. Was it Not Fade Away? Yes, that was their first one. It wasn't Satisfaction or Time Is On My Side either.
Gonna come down, when are you going to land? I should have stayed on the phone, I should have listened to my own mind. You know you can't hold me forever, I didn't sign up for you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until... Next time.